Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Kabaza, and for today, we are spotlighting an industry that's had quite a hard time during the pandemic, and that's been, you know, one of the hardest hit when it comes to these lockdown periods, and that is the restaurants industry. Some good news coming, you know, from this week, because the curfew has been extended to 11 p.m. From 9 p.m., which means that you know, those particular locations will be able to open for another 2 hours in the evening, which is usually, you know, good time for business. So we're going to be talking to Wendy Alberts, who is the CEO of the Restaurants Association of South Africa, just to hear what the impact has been, you know, on the industry, and maybe, you know, going forward, what they're looking forward to, or some of the challenges that they still anticipated down the road. Wendy, greetings to you.
Good morning. How are you all today?
No, we're doing good on this end. Happy to know that we don't have to be chased out of restaurants at 6 or 7 p.m. anymore. I think, you know, that could be a good place for us to start the news this week. We had the family meeting on Monday. Just as restaurants as an industry, what's been the general feeling after the president made this pronouncement this week?
Absolutely. You know, we are so delighted that the liquor ban and the curfew has been lifted. And we are certainly grateful to the president of South Africa for hearing our urgent plea in bringing reprieve to the industry. It's been a terrible couple of weeks for us, you know, since the 28th of December. We were hit with two swords in the side. One was the restrictions on liquor, and the second part, obviously, was the curfew. And it disabled any type of dinner time trade. So it was certainly the death of dinner time in the restaurants. Restaurants generally do most of their profitability structures and matrix on the outline of the dinner trade, which we simply haven't been able to do. And I think why we've landed up in such a complex space is that, you know, we had been shut down for large portion of 2020. We had moved into level one and we had moved into the festive season. And we had adequately prepared ourselves by financially extending ourselves to buy stock, to bring in alcohol beverages, to bring in food beverages for the anticipated turnover that we were currently on track to do for that season. And then we were shut down right in the middle. So a lot of restaurants had already taken to paying their expenses before Christmas. A lot of accounting services shut down, so a lot of restaurants were on track to be able to do it. And then we were hit with the news on the 28th, which really just completely and utterly put us into a very destructive state.
You know, as you're talking, one of the things that one has to wonder is, whenever we have these family meetings, do you know that this is what the president is about to announce, you know, as an industry, or do you guys sort of get blindsided by some of the pronouncements that are made, you know, from that point of view? I'm only asking because one would expect that there's some type of consultations that that take place.
You know, this is an excellent question that you've raised, and I think it's important that we cover it in depth. You know, critical to the success of the restaurant industry is open lines of communication. And I think often what happens in the announcements is that it's always done without notice. So we are never given fair notice to be able to uplift the stock or to be able to trade out the stock or to be able to return the stock, to be able to manage the process that leads up to the potential lockdown. What we always find is why we're in the position that we're in is that we certainly have found that the ability for government to give proper consultation to the industry has really been very dismal. We form part of the tourism sector, so we fall directly under the Minister of Tourism. The Minister of Tourism is a really good advocate for the industry. Within her mandate, I think that she delivers a degree of excellency. I certainly do feel that she listens to our needs and she tries her level best to mobilize the industry given her mandate. The major concern with the industry is that it's very fragmented. So we rest within a couple of ministerial divisions, which does not fall within the Minister of Tourism's mandate. So one, we obviously deal with our liquor through Minister Patel. We deal with labor through Minister Nexi. We're dealing obviously with the health minister, Mkhize, who we have to maneuver the way around the numbers and dealing with the increase of cases or the decrease of cases. Then we need to obviously convince the Minister of COCTA that we are responsible and that we are in a position to be good advocates to execute the protocols and the regulations. And so we found ourselves cross-conversing with very, very many different divisions and very many people. We also, pre the last lockdown, had gone to provincial level. So we were certainly dealing with all the premiers of Gauteng, of KZN, and of Cape Town in looking at regional structures when we went into those hotspot notions, if you remember, before lockdown. All these elements are critical to the survival of the restaurant industry. And we are always neglected in these conversations. So what we find is that we have big businesses that talk for us, or business unity that talks for us, or different business associations, or Ofcon, which are bottle stores and manufacturers and distributors talking for the industry. And we're never really given a fair voice to really say, guys, we are a restaurant sector. We are formal, sit-down, sophisticated establishments. We are custodians of liquor licenses. And we are here to be responsible. If we don't advocate responsibility, we stand to lose our liquor license and we stand to lose our businesses. So all that's happened over time is that we're just thrown in the pool in hospitality. So regardless whether you are a nightclub, a pub, a tavern, a shebeen, a legal operation, an underground operation, we are all just within that space. Events, you know, the major event that took place in December with the Rage, which was a super spreader, we just had to be pushed into that space where we weren't able to have proper conversations to say, stop, it can't be either or. We are part of an industry that we are one sector where we can prove responsibility and compliance. You can't just name and shame the entire industry and push it back on us because we're an easy target. And that is what we found constantly happens when society doesn't comply with the regulations. The entire hospitality industry becomes at risk for closure. And we are not necessarily the part of the sector that has displayed irresponsible behavior. And this is something I feel very strongly taking forward in the next 3 or 4 months if we are to be hit with the next wave, is appealing to our restaurants to say, we are restaurants. Let's not get the industry closed down. Let's continue. And if there is ever a discipline that can continue to serve alcohol, let's not be thrown into the bucket with the rest of hospitality. Let us as a restaurant sector stand out to South Africa and say, please, we have completely been responsible. Here's the protocols that have been followed. Here's proof of the regulations. And here's proof that we haven't had transmissions that's taken place in our establishments. And that's going to be a very, very strong case moving forward with governments in the next weeks to come.
Earlier in January, I remember going to a restaurant here in Joburg. And at the time, I think it was, the curfew was still 9 p.m. But you found that, restaurants at this particular location were all closing at 6 p.m. As opposed to, the 8 p.m. that we had sort of come to expect. And you sort of then see that the practicalities of keeping your establishment open until 8 p.m. if people aren't really coming for dinner is a bit tough, like what you were highlighting. So against that backdrop, when it comes to the restaurants industry, do you sort of have any numbers? Because like you said, sometimes the restaurants industry sort of gets lumped together with, the broader hospitality sector and all of that stuff. Specifically as restaurants, are there any metrics that can help South Africans to sort of see the contribution that restaurants are making to the national pie?
Thank you. I'm grateful for these conversations, and they're great to have between us, and also to have broader extended conversations on the points that you raise. For one, what we really need to recognize is, when situations occurred where there was the naming and shaming of irresponsible establishments, a lot of nightclubs took to do a conversion of their licenses, their liquor licenses, to that of one of a restaurant. And they brought in this component of DJs and music and festivities that went with it, and tried to manipulate what the liquor license allowed them to do. And that is what brought a lot of problems into our industry. And we need to completely analyze that and look at a number of reasons why the authorities didn't bring action against them, why they were allowed to continue to trade, why they were crowded, why they were overcrowding, etc. We need to dismantle that from what the traditional sit-down restaurant infrastructure is in South Africa. The second point, which we also need to include on that, is that operationally, when they brought the lockdown through on the 28th of December, nobody sat down and made accountability to say, if we bring this restricted curfew, what will we do to the restaurant industry? Operationally, it was impossible to serve a dinner time trade. And you're absolutely right. Many restaurants had to close at 6 o'clock because we needed to get staff home. And the one thing that we are as an industry, we are advocates of compliance. So in the restaurant sector in specific, we are certainly there to be legally adhering to all these protocols, to support government, and not to do things that will bring an impact and a negative impact into getting the industry shut down. So whilst there's been a couple of rogue operators, we can't close the entire restaurant industry down. And that is one of the new mentions in the latest restrictions or regulations that were published, is that the Minister of COCTA has mandate to be able to shut down any establishment that she feels is putting the public at risk. And I think if that was in effect in December, a lot of these raised concerns of operators continue to trade could have been dealt with promptly, not to risk the rest of the industry. The second major issue which happened was that, and I don't want to blame anybody because I think we're all at fault, and I believe that we can only take from the lessons and we can learn not to go back to put us in that same disadvantage to have our businesses closed down. I don't think that the country adequately prepared itself for the festive season. You know, us in tourism and us in hospitality, we are well aware, and I think the general public are aware of the amount of people that flood to different parts of South Africa to enjoy the holiday season, which we well know in South Africa has now gone from being typically a 2 week time to around about a 6 week time. So we certainly know a lot of businesses shut down around about the 16th and they come back on the 6th or the 8th of January or the next week, the following Monday. And this has become culturally what we've seen has been an extension of the festive season in South Africa. And as a country, we should put restrictions on numbers, on house parties, on illicit parties, on the underground nightclubs. We know that it's summertime, people want to party, they want to get together with their friends, their families, and engage in the festive behavior that is a celebration of the turndown of the year that has just passed. And we didn't properly manage this, regardless of who was responsible for that decision. And that really set us into the position that it did towards the 28th of December. And it started with the year-end parties from the Matrix. And it started with those house parties where they weren't given an opportunity to have Matric dance or celebrate the end of their school years. And they also felt resentful and they moved into having their own parties. And the parties went on for a weeks-long celebration, moving into rage. And it wasn't only one sector in South Africa. It was all areas in South Africa where the kids became irresponsible and it led through and infiltrated through to the festive season. We can't allow this to happen when it comes back to Easter, although culturally it's a different celebration that we move into. We need to take the lessons from this. And what we have learned is that it is about controlled numbers. And everything that we do moving forward needs to control the numbers in order to keep the country safe and to keep the numbers down.
One of the things that you've brought up quite consistently, you know, through this conversation is that issue of behavior. But before we attack the behavior, one of the things that, you know, you've also raised is this issue of, you know, the alcohol ban and liquor sales and that type of thing. I'm sensing that there is, I don't know what word to use except to say that a symbiosis or symbiotic relationship between, you know, restaurants and the liquor industry. That's deeper than, you know, most of us, you know, anticipate. You know, people think that, you know, at restaurants, you're going there to eat, but it sounds like if you're not eating and drinking, that it's a tough proposition to sell to people.
What we need to be reminded of is that the Liquor Act governs the responsibility of the custodian of the license. And within that license, it tells the operator that they need to be able to serve food in a seated environment. So each allocation of a seat is aimed at people being able to sit down and eat a meal within a restaurant establishment. Also, people will be in contravention of the bylaws that currently are in place for social distancing if they are standing in pubs and bars. And this is going back to this area and this conversation of controlled spaces. The minute you're in close contact and there's loud music, you begin to raise your energy levels, and the level at which you communicate gets heightened. People get excited and they get friendly and they get enjoyable. And that is why it's so important to ensure that you measure up to the outlines and the responsibilities that sit within that liquor license. There are, I think, 11 different types of liquor licenses that determine what your responsibilities are in each area of operation. Now, remember, we obviously fit within those restaurant licenses, and that's why I say it's important and a conversation we're really going to push hard through, that we are the restaurant sector and we are separate to other businesses and we don't want to be coupled. And when there is news that's made of an establishment that's been irresponsible and it's not a restaurant, I'm certainly going to make highlight to separate that has a negative impact on our business. All through lockdown, there's been conversions, which shouldn't have happened. You're a custodian of a liquor license in a particular advocacy, and your business is based on that particular model. You can't go and change your operation to selling Borevoss rolls and hot dogs outside and having a DJ jam music where people are dancing and in close contact. That has really been part of why we've landed up in the position. And if we want to get economical reprieve, we've got to ensure that we categorize where we fit within the sector and we continue to show responsibility in that we don't have a negative conversation that gets put back on us. And the key thing, again, which I will say again and again, is that in a time like this, and I get that we're in the National Disaster Act, there should be conversations with each sector. And I'm quite comfortable for government to come to me and give me the reports of operators that have not been responsible. And I'm quite comfortable to have conversations to understand why they have behaved unproportionately to put the industry at risk. We are by no means an authority body. We're merely a voluntary association that is there to really look after the interests and to put out proper content. But it's also important that we have these conversations to understand, you know, did they run out of PPE? Is their supplier not able? Did the supplier not deliver? Could they not get a secondary recourse from an alternative shop in the area? These are all critical issues which we need to address quite swiftly in order to avoid the negative publicity that always comes to the restaurant sector when these infractions happen.
It certainly sounds like there are some very tough conversations that need to be had, you know, particularly around the oversight of who's allowing people to shift you know, from one type of business to another, because, you know, that's been quite characteristic of the lockdown period, where people have been changing or converting existing businesses, not only in the restaurant sector, but in a number of businesses, just as a way to keep revenues of some sort coming into the door. So one of the things you've just spoken about is that the Restaurants Association is voluntary. In terms of the work that you do, what's in your purview, and how does the association actually function?
We're an information hub for any restaurant operation out there that comes to us that would like information or content. Through COVID, I think we've proved that we are really a reliable, credible body with huge integrity, that it is an organization where we get first-hand content that you can certainly trust. And I think over time, this is what we'll continue to build our business on, and we will continue to ensure that we are able to move forward and be the reliable source of information for the restaurant sector. Our profile has changed somewhat as COVID has unveiled us. We've had to obviously lobby to get the industry open on many accounts. We've had to also look at mechanisms on saving the industry. Our mandate at this point in time also extends to engaging with a massive variety of people within the food chain that have not supported the industry or have not perhaps been available to look after the industry. So one element that we're dealing with is obviously the landlords, critical to the industry. We've been having massive conversations, rewarding and acknowledging the hero landlords for being able to work with good restaurateurs. The second part is that we've been dealing obviously with landlords who don't want to give any kind of relief and trying to understand their position. And whilst we understand they're a business like we are, we've all been affected in this situation. And survival will only mean if everybody plays a contributed role in bringing relief in some which way. We've been dealing obviously with the banks who's closed lending on the industry. They deem us as high risk. So there's been absolutely zero input of bringing functional cash flow, which we can use to keep our businesses trading. So we're finding that operators are scrounging. They're taking private lending at high rates, at exorbitant rates. We've got a lot of these opportunistic lending houses coming in that are charging massively high rates to be able to bring some cash flow, and the restaurants simply aren't in a position to pay it back. We're dealing with credit cards, cutting off credit card rates, third-party deliveries who took the largest chunk through lockdown and didn't make it financially viable for us to trade with the deliveries on the first levels of lockdown. We are certainly dealing with the insurance companies who really are delaying paying out the reprieve that is due to the industry. We are in and out of Supreme Court. There are technical decisions that need to be made. It's very frustrating. Restaurateurs are not prepared to sign off on the full and final settlement. The insurance companies are manipulating a settlement because they know that the restaurant sector is desperate. The matter has been challenged in court. It's going on in court. It's now a year of this constant taking us back to court, asking whether or not they can appeal it and reappeal it and a voice to appeal it again. And we really need to get to a position where a ruling is made now that the restaurants can get their payouts and relieve themselves financially to pay back those debts. Over and above that, we deal with the UIF and the TERS, which has been a frustrating part. Again, 28th, we were put into lockdown with no relief from TERS. And, you know, these should have been preparations that happened well before we went into lockdown, that there was a fund available to support staff that went on unpaid and short time. We've been living on short time at a fraction of our turnover for a year now. You know, we've been operating at an average of 50% capacity at 60% of turnover in a 100% market that is requiring us to pay back the debt. And there are so many other critical issues that we've addressed that need to be looked at. You know, rebates on liquor licenses. We've traded for 3 months out of the year. We're calling to the liquor board to, you know, give those reductions or those rebates back. There's been slow allocation to get the renewal licenses out. It's a frustrating fight with various liquor boards to get those licenses for restaurants to trade. We look at SAMRO and SAMPRA, and again, you know, the threat of legal issues being impounded on many of our operators who haven't been able to even play music in our restaurants. And these are all difficulties which are statutory licenses, which are governed by legislation for us to pay. And while there can be announcements made in the blanket approach for regulations to be amended, we're also calling to government to say, if you close us down, freeze our debt. If you close us down, ensure that our liquor license rebates are effective, and the same with SAMRO, SAMPRA, and SAB TV licenses. We get no reprieve from government because there is no consultation, and there is no consultation with the correct advisory body within those different ministerial sectors that can give us the necessary relief. So we feel we make a lot of noise and we constantly have these conversations about reprieve, but it never gets to the person who desperately needs to be able to give us an answer to make the decision to say, we understand that you haven't had use of this. We agree that there should be compensation issued in it. And I think the last fiasco, which is on the table, which is the sectorial determination for the National Bargaining Council and the constitution of that organization to deem representation of 51% of the industry. So we've certainly called to Minister Nexi to suspend it. Lines of communication are shut down. We are passed to the different, managerial positions within the different divisions within that ministerial node. And it just gets diluted and diluted and diluted to a position where we're certainly not able to get any relief or get any consensus that even an investigation with the registrar will take place to understand how that got signed off if they don't represent the majority of the industry. So the minute there is a challenge for statistics, for factual content, for documentation, for detail on data, those doors get shut with the various ministerial divisions. And we can't continue to operate in a space like that. So we now, a year into COVID, well, almost, have really learned how to bring the ability to ask the correct questions and to, again, outline to government on in every level. We are here. COVID is not going away for a very long time. Take our hand, respect our industry, acknowledge our industry. You know, give us the ability to work with you to find proper solutions that will have the least financial impact. So to have cut our businesses and taking that life and that heartbeat for a year away has also emotionally impacted the staff and the operators who own these beautiful businesses, because it's pushed us into a sense of complete stress. Where do we find the next rand to pay the bills? We are dealing with the threat of so many legal actions taking place. We're dealing with the threat of being open, facing shutdown, or being in a state of closure. We are looking at dealing with all these licenses, which are compulsory for us to keep our businesses open, with no income. We're constantly negotiating with our staff to try and keep them working for minimal wage, sometimes just for any possibility, just to keep going until we can get the UIF or the TERS. Our restaurateurs are exhausted from not working. Our staff are begging to come to work to simply have the opportunity to lift their morale and have a sense of belonging. And I can only again and again and again give all these beautiful operators and beautiful people who work in our restaurants a standing ovation for their courage and their heroism to keep their businesses afloat and not to have quit. It is very disappointing that we haven't had the support, that we've really been left as an island on our own, very, very, very fearful of what the next step is going to be, where there's not been anybody who's come to us and said, we've got you, restaurants. We know how you contribute to the GDP. We know currently that you're losing billions of rands every day by not being able to trade. We respect you, that you have a sense of compliance, that you want to be law-abiding. We respect that you contribute to the GDP, that you pay your taxes, that you have structured legal businesses, that you have contractual agreements that you are responsible for. We've had none of that in 12 months. We've just been battered and beaten without conversation, without respect, without remorse. And we've been left high and dry without the support of any single one element of any one person that has a relation to our businesses to be able to help us through this time. And the last point that I want to make on that is that whilst a restaurant is a business and there might be one or two owners or four partners, we also employ hundreds of beautiful staff that support an extension of their livelihoods in their communities. But what's more important to be reminded of is that we also support hundreds of other entrepreneurs, the graphic designer, the person who designs a menu, prints a menu. We talk about the people who do the extractions, the cleaning, the plumbers, the transport guys, the taxis. Everybody's impacted. So when you close a business, you close a village, you close the ability for an entire village to be supportive out of that business. And I just hope that the conversations that we take through the next days, weeks, and months will really bring us to a place where government certainly gives us the respect we do to have conversations and separates us from the rest of the rogue operators that don't operate their businesses in the best interest to save the restaurant industry in South Africa.
Let's certainly hope that these conversations, important conversations, do take place, and that the industry as a whole can be safeguarded to allow for sustainability to take place into the future. So that's been us with Wendy Alberts, who is the CEO of the Restaurants Association of South Africa, giving us some insight into the impact of the recent alcohol restrictions and trading hours restrictions. What that has done to their particular industry, getting into some of the technicalities around liquor licenses, who can do what, and then some of the conversions as well. But more importantly, talking about some of the issues that they have faced, and what she says is a lack of support for their industry, and not being given a fair voice to actually, talk about the fact that they are an important GDP contributor, and making sure that they safeguard, their restaurants, their members, their patrons, their staff, relationships with lenders, relationships with landlords, relationships with suppliers and other businesses that they support through the value chain. This will be an important conversation to keep an eye on in future, especially as we see hoping that there isn't a third wave, and just hoping that as South Africans, people do behave a bit better so that we can keep as many businesses as possible open. So that's been it, Wendy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting us to give you an outline of what currently happens in the restaurant industry.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Quite a heavy conversation with Wendy, just around what's going on in the restaurant industry. And more than anything else, I think she really did a good job in giving us, proper insight on a practical level, drilling down to what it actually means to run a restaurant during these times, and some of the pressures that the industry has actually faced, and the considerations that they always have to be thinking about. One of the things I liked the most, and I think this is probably the attitude of a lot of industries that have been affected along the way, is if you're going to shut down our businesses, then are you also going to suspend our debts? Are you going to help us to suspend the rent payments that we have to make? Because, these are the practical considerations, and it's probably why the liquor industry, another affected industry, was taken to court, when you look at the cases with the South African breweries, etc. Because as much as there are health and safety concerns, one of the big things around the world, including in South Africa, is the economy. Health and safety, very important. You can't deny that. But if we put that on a shelf to say we've acknowledged that their health and safety concerns, the economic considerations are also very important, because it's one thing to say that you're trying to keep people safe, but people need to be able to afford certain amounts of safety. Because if someone doesn't have work or an income, how can they be buying sanitizer for themselves? How can they be ensuring that their family has masks and all of these things, has medical aid to pay for hospital bills if in a situation where someone does get sick from the coronavirus itself? How does a restaurant worker who has been laid off or hasn't gone to work in a while, how do they continue living their life and being safe and all of that stuff? So it's just it's a circle. Everything is interconnected, and in an economy, there are no islands in an economy. One thing always affects another thing, and that's one of the things that we always have to be cognizant about, this issue of interconnectedness, and the fact that you can't just switch something off. Nothing is ever suspended in an economy, right? In the US, for example, one of the things we keep talking about is the fact that there hasn't been inflation, right? On a consumer level, there hasn't been inflation over the last maybe decade, when we've seen, you know, record amounts of stimulus, low interest rates and all of that stuff. There's been hardly any consumer inflation, right? But the nature of an economy is that there are repercussions, and one of the easiest repercussions one can see is how high the stock market has gone. Even during these pandemic times, the stock market continues to tick up, and that's where you see some measure of inflation. So it's not like things just happen, you know, randomly. And when people say you can't, you know, grow money on trees, or you can't just do things in isolation, this is exactly what we're talking about. So when it comes to restaurants, you can't just, let's say, switch off alcohol sales. You can't restrict trading hours and just expect that somewhere down the line things will be okay, because they won't. These are all the things that the country is going to have to claw back, because the restaurant industry fits into its own supply. It has its own supply chains, and it fits into other supply chains. So there are lots of livelihoods, there are a lot of incomes, there are a lot of businesses along the way that get affected. So going forward, we just hope that you know, the restrictions as they are, you know, that we don't have a tightening of restrictions. It's a good thing that we are now down the road where we are vaccinating people. And one will hope that we don't find ourselves in a situation where there is another wave that forces us to close businesses in future. So that's been it. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Life. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, and I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. So remember that the Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.